And welcome to the Appy Hour.
The always fun,
semi-informative,
always relevant,
and slightly irreverent
Appy Hour talk show presented by App Growth Summit.
So whether you're on your way to work,
winding down after work,
or you're bored at work,
pop in an episode and take a quick shot of the Appy Hour.
Hey, Kehlani Ampich Curtis, the marketing specialist here at App Growth Summit. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Louis Tangay, founder and managing director of App Growth Summit.
And who are we with today?
We are joined by the immaculate Mike Brooks, Senior Vice President of Revenue at Weatherbug. How are you doing, Mike?
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for having me today. I'm doing great.
That's awesome. It's always a fun time when Mike's around. Everyone knows this, so happy to enjoy this with you.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me. This is going to be great.
It is.
Very timely for our conversation today.
Yes, in the last few weeks or so, IDFA was released, and we're going to get to that. But before we start getting all into the meat of the matter, let's have some appetizers with the little get-to-know Mike. How's that?
Ooh, that sounds lovely. Hit me. What you got?
Kehlani?
Okay.
What do you want to ask Mike first? What do you want to know?
So we all know that you work at Weatherbug, but we can learn all that from your LinkedIn. My real question is, if you weren't an app growth expert, what would be your chosen profession?
Oh, man. So I would say when I was graduating from college, I had to make the decision of, I had done a lot of writing in my past, and I thought I wanted to be a writer. I was actually the editor-in-chief of the Black and Blue Jay, one of the predecessors of The Onion, but the same type of venue. So I actually, out of college, planned to and applied to be a writer at The Onion. It ended up not working out. I got a degree in, I got a master's in econometrics and kind of went a little bit of a mathier route. But I think if I wasn't in this ads world, I hopefully would be funny enough to be a comedy writer somewhere. But I guess everybody at home can judge and heckle me as they feel things go today.
I believe it would have worked out. But
thank
I mean,
you,
I'm sure.
You. That's high praise.
Probably would have made a lot less money, though.
I think so, too.
To be fair, I hope in my heart of hearts that in the job description to be a writer at The Onion, one of the prerequisites is that your writing has to make people cry. That's all.
Love it. Love it.
And if you haven't figured out, Kehlani is the mother of dad jokes. So
I love it. Bring them on.
Interestingly enough, we have yet one more thing in common, Mike. I dropped out of college to start a music magazine.
No way.
Yeah. So we had a writing background that didn't turn into our, I guess, your mobile career and my sort of pseudo mobile career.
What was the magazine business like?
It was like a lot of grinding work. My instructor at the time, after one semester, we had to send a music business course. I went to school for music and video business. And we had to do a business plan on anything related to music. So I had been a writer since I was six. So I just always written short stories and everything to just because this is pre-mobile games. So I needed to occupy myself. So I figured, let me just make stuff up. So I was a pretty good writer. And so I just said, oh, you know what? Let me just write about music. So I would do a music magazine. And he gave me an A+ and said, you know what? Honestly, on like after class one day, he's like, why don't you just do this? I'm like, oh, but I got to finish school. He's like, this is like repetitive. It's not going to help you out. You don't need any of this stuff to do that. And you should do it.
Wow.
And then I said, well, what if I can't get some of these people on the phone? And he's like, and he said something that changed my life, Mike and Kehlani. And everyone listening, he said, you'd be surprised who you can get on the phone if you just try. And I basically changed that to my life motto, or I guess, of like, you'd be surprised what you can accomplish if you just go for it.
Wow. That is a dynamite motto.
Inspiration. So after a long day of revenue generation for Weatherbug, what kind of drink do you like to wind down with, Mike?
So I would say when I was living in New York, which was a good 7-year chunk of my life, the Manhattan was my go-to. I would say since I have moved to Baltimore about 6 to 9 months ago, I have taken a step back from the booze and really gotten into like juices. Like I'm like juice it. Like I don't like buy orange juice anymore. I like make it on a KitchenAid stand mixer. So like I hit like suburbs and 30 is like super hard. And like, I've gone from like partying super hard. Well, obviously right now everybody's kind of inside. So the alcohol answer is still kind of the Manhattan, but it's trending more to like a fresh squeeze orange juice. Is that fair?
A fresh squeeze Manhattan.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Oh, that's so professional.
Thank you. Thank you.
Petition to change your official industry nickname to Mike the Juice Brooks.
Ooh, that's all. The juice.
I like it. The juice.
It's worth the squeeze. I like it.
Oh, business.
Not in a weird way, though. Oh, I hope that didn't come off in a weird way. That's okay.
No. It comes off whatever way people take it as. So, you know, but we know you all mean it. We know you mean it innocently. So
let's do some business.
I always think it's so funny when we ask people what their favorite drink is, their alcoholic drink versus their non-alcoholic drink. The variety between the two is always really entertaining. Like, I don't care about what you drink for booze. Let me know what you're like what you drink when you're not drinking.
And are you putting some work into it? You know, if you're squeezing, it's for real.
Well, unless you're a mixologist, I guess some of these people do. Like, you go to the most expensive bar in town, whatever town you're in, and there's always some guy with like overalls or something, and he's like a little too serious about making the drink.
Yeah,
it's like, bro, it's a vodka tonic.
It'll take 20 minutes. It'll be $30, but it'll be worth it at least the first one.
Yeah, see them getting all eye level with it, a leveler, making sure every ice cube matches the right ratio.
What you're talking about.
That's it. I think that's like my dream moonlighting gig, is to be like a fake bartender and just give people overpriced Capri Suns, like in a shot glass or something.
You could get a job anywhere in America right now. I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
Yeah. So you moved to Baltimore from New York?
I did. I pulled the trigger last September.
So why did you choose Baltimore?
So my older sister's here. I did undergrad and grad school here. I always kind of knew that I loved it. And, you know, in the app space, it's always been like a, do you want to be in New York or do you want to be out west kind of question. And for me, all of my base was always East Coast. But I always felt like New York is a bit of a con long term. Like, it's super expensive. Like, you work your face off to be, in the middle of the pack. And, you know, if you want to raise kids, I think it can be really hard, as, you know, from a cost perspective in New York. So thinking about the future, thinking about like, I want to play tennis more, I want to play golf more, getting into a little bit of the suburban world. You know, if you're in LA or SF, you have better access to the outdoors. If you're like in the city, you can't drive 5 minutes to get to tennis or golf. And that's something that I have just absolutely leaned into super hard, and it's been awesome. So loving the burbs.
Speaking of golf, what are some of your hobbies? So are you a good golfer or are you a bad golfer? I think everyone secretly doesn't like golf, especially because the whole point of golf is to play the least amount of golf, or so I've been told. So that tells me everything I need to know.
What's your handicap?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's about, I would say it's always about getting outside. And for those of you out there listening, would love to play golf. I'm at about the level where I'm unlikely to embarrass you. So I would say I normally hit between 100 and 110. I have like, you know, half of my shots are really good and I know how to pick up. So I can play with the best of them, but, you know, I end up picking up a lot. But I would say I'm very good on the etiquette. So if you're thinking about, should I invite Mike Brooks to go golfing this summer? You should lean towards yes. That's what I'm going to say.
I would concur with that. Actually, you know what? If you invite Mike Brooks for anything, that's a yes.
Let's do it. I would love to. I'll be up in New York. You know, I'll, as part of moving to Baltimore, you know, I know I'm going to have to travel more. So I'll be back up to New York. I'll be out west once those things become cool again. But it comes down to what's the future of work. Who knows?
Well, you know, where you can go in November. You can come down to Austin, because I don't know if you know, but I just moved as well.
Ooh, you're in Austin now?
Yeah.
Wow. I have two folks on my team in Austin.
What? All right. Well,
so I'll be there.
Podcast, connect me.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, because I'm trying to meet everyone I can, because obviously I didn't know I was lucky enough to know a handful of people before I moved here. But now I'm realizing that there's so many people that I'm like, wait, you're here too.
The Digital Turbine crew is out there. There's a decent crew from Amazon. Like, Austin's blowing up, dude. Good for you.
Yeah. TikTok's here. Facebook. Apple is the second largest campus. Obviously, all the Tesla people coming in, that has nothing to do with mobile, but that does have something to do with the housing.
Different kind of mobile. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. The original mobile. OG mobile. So since you're moving around and everything, you're talking about traveling, like what place would you like to travel to someday, but you haven't?
So two super high on my list. I'll go with number one, because I had this thing where before I was 30, I had this goal that was like, I want to do the seven wonders of the modern world. And I met my wife about 2 years away from that. And together we did most of those. And that, and I was able to achieve that. So that to me was just like a huge spectacular, like I'm so happy I was able to do that. My wife's version of that is the seven continents, which is like really cool. And then you remember Antarctica is one of them. So, so like right now, to be honest, we're trying to figure out the best way to do a trip to Antarctica, which for her would be her seventh continent. Do either of you have experience? Have either of you gone to the deep south?
The deep south. We're not talking Louisiana. We're talking
a little south of Chile.
Yeah. Actually, I have a plan that could work out.
Yeah.
Because you know App Grow Summit, the company I built.
Oh, yeah.
So you know, we did North America, obviously, because we're here. We did Berlin. We've gone to Singapore. In the first year, we did Sydney, Australia.
Wow.
And then we went to Brazil. So in this year, we're doing, we have a few apps from Nigeria and Kenya that are going to be in our EMEA event. Mm-hmm. So we're like, okay, so now we're starting to cover Africa. We need one more.
We need
App Growth Summit Antarctica.
I would be so honored to speak at the inaugural event, should you have it.
We have to find someone who will want to someone that would want to sponsor this trip, because you see, like, there's a lot of some vendors, service providers, like, will take a group to an outing, right? And they'll take you to an island or like Napa or wherever. Well, there was one time at a previous company that we went up to, like, I guess it's Mount Whistler or something like that up in Canada. Uh-huh. And it was like maybe 12 to 15 people went up there with a few of the vendors that helped pay for it. And then like a good 10 high level experts. So if we're going to go up there, then mountain ski and stuff like that, you know, why not Antarctica? That's what I say. And do like a workshop down there, like a high-end stuff, like the Mike Brooks of the world, of the mobile world. Go down there to 15 of you and just have multiple different round tables and really work on some things. And like, that would be awesome.
I'm in. You tell me when and I'll be there.
All right. So, and obviously we'll have to do the plus ones, because your wife can't be left out of this one. She won't be your wife anymore.
Of course. And I'll cover the plus one, of course.
Yeah.
But any happy spot. I would love to. As we're finding now, the unit economic costs of trip to Antarctica are hefty. So I can't wait for these folks who are really digging into the new world of IDFA, making fists of cash and throwing awesome parties. It's the future.
Well, I guess that's the perfect segue right there, right? Mm-hmm. Since you mentioned the
Who's
bomb.
Throwing the parties?
Well, that, or you mentioned the other bomb, the IDFA bomb.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so Mike, so you've got a bone to pick with IDFA. You want to kick it off and get started, and then we'll just riff for the next 5 hours?
So what I would, the one soapbox I'm on right now in a really big way is how upset I was with Apple's moves around the ATT prompt and the way they communicated that the day of launch. So I think it was Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern, Monday, April 26th. And the morning when that change happened, a whole lot of guidance came out for apps as to how we're able to do what we call a soft prompt prior to the ATT prompt, right? So there's the Weatherbug would like to track you across apps and sites that's owned by Apple. There's this idea where we can say, hey, you know, please say yes to this so we can stay in business. I mean, again, it's not that bad, but people can do various things of that. And, you know, these rules came out, which basically made everyone violate on day one. It's like, hey, you can't say allow in your pre-prompt if you say allow on the actual prompt. And you can't use these words and you can't have a choice and you have to prompt and lead them directly there. So one, I don't think there are changes that I disagree with in the aggregate. But there are changes that I kind of look at compared to the rest of what Apple is up to and wonder why focus on this. Like, this seems oddly specific, and I don't want to say a little bit of an overreach, but it does feel that way when on like the day, you know, we've been talking for 9 months about how to best prepare for this. And, you know, we've read the tea leaves, I think, very well. To have something like this where you launch and put everybody automatically in violation, especially like the do-gooders like us, I haven't beefed with Apple a lot during this process. Like, it's part of a transition that I understand, but I really don't appreciate the fact that there was no guidance around these prompts, and then prompts, then guidance that, you know, negated everybody's, what they're doing. So we have to change it immediately and do a release, and everybody else does. And, you know, in the long term, it's okay. But it, you know, for somebody who has spent a lot of time trying to be on the right side, it feels a little bit like a slap in the face, I'll be honest.
Well, I think the good thing is that they're not just going to pull your app from the App Store.
Right.
They're going to give you the warning and tell you what you need to fix. Or the next time you try to do an update, then they'll flag it and say, we won't allow the update, right? Right.
And we didn't get a warning. We didn't get anything flagged. Like, they're not coming after this. But still, like, this is a pretty big sweeping policy change by them that they're asking us to do a lot, us as publishers especially, to do a lot of anticipation. So to have this kind of thing come out without a chance to actually remedy, I know that's what we're doing now. And, you know, maybe this is just me being a little hurt about it, but but I, you know, I just felt like that was a bit of an overstep and a weird thing for them to do at that time.
It is. I think those who feel that Apple did all this to hurt Facebook kind of have another feather in their cap to, or a little more conspiracy, like cue the Leonardo DiCaprio meme of him pointing at the TV. You know, it's like, oh, it's like, you know, Facebook came out with their interstitial before the 14.5 release. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really well done. And it actually had allow, and they were using the language across from the pre-prompt through to the iOS prompt in the customizable space and everything, where it was really well done to the point where others, like,
you even called it out. Yeah, it was very, in your blog post, you called out how good of a job they did. And I agree with you.
Yeah, like, that's the way you should do it. And iHeartRadio did the same or similar thing. And then it's like, then Mike's like, hey, check this out. So one of your friends or colleagues discovered some new language that said, nope, you cannot use the word allow.
Exactly.
And it's like, well, I guess the good thing is they are allowing the use of the word allow, at least for now.
Right. There's, as far as I've heard, there haven't been any bans, anybody taken down. They did approve us, right? So with that as being a part of it. So we'll get there. But, you know, I think that the modes of communication, at least especially for something like this, where if you're doing, you know, let's just put they have my email, right? Like, we do this thing called submitting our app to the App Store so they know how to get a hold of us. It would be helpful if there was a quick note saying, hey, by the way, this is going to affect today. These are the things that you may want to keep an eye on because they're semi-recent. That's all. If you're listening out there, Apple, that's all I want is like an email, maybe a day before even, or, you know, more time would be good. But the heads up is helpful.
Well, here's one other thing, since we're on it, that this was in a Slack group and something that was shared also privately with me, but it's not private anymore. But you know, it's not revealing any of the sources or the apps or the people or anything. But apparently, now, of course, this is all hearsay, Apple's forcing to show the ATT prompt even if a user clicks no on the soft prompt. So you know how, like, some of the soft prompts, the strategy is that if you say, please allow this so we can track you, you click allow, then they'll initiate the iOS prompt. And if you said, no, I don't want to see personalized ads, I mean, show me, you know, a generic experience, or obviously language that's shorter than that, then they'll just pop the interstitial away and not trigger the iOS prompt. Because once you trigger the prompt, as everyone here probably knows, you've got one shot at this. And if they say no, then the only way to say yes now is to go all the way into your privacies and tracking and manually turn it back on. You know, no one's going to do that. And when you do an update, you're apparently not allowed to reset the permission. So this is really a life or death, marry me or divorce or kill me type of thing.
Well, let me add one more piece of context too. It's not even that if they click no, they have to go to the prompt. You're not allowed to have a no anymore. You can only have continue or move on. So it's not, and I understand you don't want dark patterns and you don't want to trick people, you know, kind of the way Apple is tricking people by making it opt in. You don't want to do that. So they're not even giving an option for anything other than we're going to show you this prompt, you know?
Yeah. Apparently now they're going to start rejecting those prompts that those pre-prompts that have an alternative option.
Right.
But they are saying that the pre-prompt can say, you can have a pre-prompt, but it has to clearly state what you're going to use the data for. And you can't use the word allow. You can only like continue or something like that. So they're like, there's your shot.
Right.
But if you can't use an allow button, maybe you can use allow in some of the other smaller words. We're going to find out a lot in the next few months.
Right. Right. And look, I think many of us would agree that this only matters a certain amount, right? Like this can't ever be a big deal, because for IDFA to really matter in the future, it has to achieve a critical mass, which I think most people reject that idea that that's going to happen. So I think that, you know, whether even if it's 50% opt-in, like remember this is piled. So if you're doing attribution, you need it for both the publisher and the advertiser. So when you stack up these 50%, you run away from
50 anymore.
Right. You run away from critical mass really fast. So that's the other component to all of this is like, yes, as a publisher, driving that up will help us make money in the short term, but it's not even a year-long problem. Like the problem is completely transformed in 12 months.
So if that's the case, then what advice would you give for marketers moving forward, since obviously there's unreliable targeting and some of the SK Ad Network stuff is just, you know, it's not even close. So what would you advise?
So one thing that I would say, one of the debates that's happening within our team right now, and this stands for both the ad targeting, like how we want to target our ads to drive new users for Weatherbug, as well as the ad targeting that takes place on Weatherbug as a publisher, right? And it's kind of this debate between two schools of thought in mobile, one being on device and one being projection, right? So in the on device world, you have folks like LiveRamp, On Device ATS, you have Number 8, you have people who can make specific audiences based on things that are happening on your phone, but they never leave, right? So there's no identifier that leaves. It doesn't help for some use cases, but for targeting, it's great. But you could, you know, whereas you used to be able to have 10,000 audience segments in the cloud, you can have 500. So there's some changes there versus this projection idea, like where we have 15% of our IDF, like let's assume we achieve long-term 15, 20% IDFA opt-in, and then projecting what we know about those users to the rest of our user base based on other piece of information we have, right? So when we think about, those are two kind of statistically different ways of going about it. I would say on both sides, we're leaning more towards on-device right now. So we would rather, as a company that wants to target audiences in media that does not have iOS opt-in, right? We want to scale to the whole world. Using a technology that derives information specifically from each consumer is a better input than the projection world, even though the projection world is like kind of the easiest to pull off in the short term. So I know that, so when we're thinking about it, it's like it comes down to those two schools of thought as to how do we want to drive monetization and targeting in the future.
Cool. I think it's almost like a return to old school marketing as well. We have to think of like, since you don't have the data, you do have some knowledge. It's almost like playing poker, I guess. I don't know if you play poker.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like playing poker where you see your cards. You see, for example, in Texas Hold'em or in stud games, or I don't want to get too in the weeds with poker, but basically some cards you see of yours and others and some cards you don't. And then it's a bunch of guesswork based on patterns of the past and what you know about certain players. And I guess same thing here is based on who your best users have been at this point, unless you're a brand new app or business, you should kind of have a user persona in mind that you know who your best users are. Or in gaming, they call it whales, you know, but like who are your best users? What are they like? What are their demographics, their age range? And then have to go back to the old school ways of building user personas and communicating directly to that type of person. Since this way, if like 100 people see a billboard, but it applies to one person, then that one person is targeted in a sense, right? By the language and the style and the creative and the brand. So brand's going to be more important. And I guess you're just going to have to now, you know, just speak more to your users as humans. It's a novel concept. But
I think you are 100% right, especially when you talk about like old school becoming new school. One other technology I would kind of throw into that soup is panel-based measurement. I think historically, like, we've been all about one-to-one for app attribution and for overall like other attributions. I think that, you know, we talked about targeting earlier. We are going to have to become much more fluid with the ideas of both SK Ad Network as well as like greater panel-based measurement, which we used to say, oh, statistically, that's, you know, that's trash. But now it's not only the best we have, it's good.
What a world.
I know.
Well, one company's trash is another one's metrics. No.
That's right.
All right. Well, on that note, fortunately, we could talk about this all day. Unfortunately, we don't have all day. But what we do have all day is dad jokes all day. Kehlani's got one for you there.
Yes, I'm ready, especially since we talked about Capri Sun. So this is a little off the cuff. But let's see if you can figure this one out. What did the dad say when his son asked him what his favorite vacation spot was?
What'd he say?
Capri Sun.
Ah, nice.
Yep, an island in Italy that, after my quick Google search, is definitely on my bucket list.
It's beautiful.
I'm not sure if I'll beat you to the 7 modern wonders of the world or all 7 continents with you and your wife, but Capri is now on my list.
That's awesome.
Is it one of those island towns?
Yeah.
It's on the coast of Italy. Mm-hmm. It's known for its blue grotto, I believe, right? Am I thinking of the right part of Italy?
It was a 5-second Google search, but it sounds about right from my first hit on Google.
Well, now we know that that's all it takes to get on Kehlani's bucket list is 5 seconds.
I'm taking all of the suggestions from everyone we're talking to and all of the cool places they've traveled, and I'm coming up with my bucket list. So
all
we'll
right,
see.
Then look up Cinque Terre.
Well, if you guys see me on my LinkedIn saying that I'm enjoying a Capri Sun in Capri, Italy, then you'll know it was directly because of Mike Brooks and his influence.
Hell yeah.
The millions and millions of app marketers who have listened to this.
Oh, definitely. And the millions of them that are totally connected with me on LinkedIn.
Hell yeah.
All right, Mike. Well, it was a great time, as always, with you. And if someone wants to get in touch with you other than emailing you, which we're not going to let the spam you, but what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Hit me up on LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. I love sharing the stuff that we learn at Weatherbug that I'm learning through my journey. So hit me up there. Would love to connect.
Awesome. Well, thank you all very much. Thank you, Kehlani. And here's the outro.
Hey, you made it to the end of the episode. Thanks for taking the journey with us, and we hope you found it exactly as advertised, where it was mostly fun and entertaining, but we did manage to get in a little tech talk in there as well, so you can kind of tell your managers that this was actually time spent doing work stuff. Trust me, we won't tell on you. Please subscribe so you can get notifications every time we release an episode, and please head on over to appgrowthsummit.com. Let us know what you thought, or let us know if you'd like to be a guest in a future episode or recommend the guest that would be absolutely amazing. Please tell all your friends and colleagues about the Appy Hour, and be sure to have lots of laughs until the next episode.